The headlines this hour. Russia says Ukraine has launched more than 10 drones on the Crimean Peninsula, as Kiev reports widespread Russian drone strikes. The gunman kills at least 9 people and wounds 7 others at a busy mall north of Dallas in the U.S. state of Texas. And the Israeli military's blockade of the occupied West Bank city of Ariha enters its third week. Thanks for joining us. There seems to be no end in sight for the war in Ukraine as Kiev and Moscow launched new drone attacks against each other. The cities of Sevastopol and Saki in Crimea were targeted by 10 drone strikes. Russia has several air bases in the area, but local officials said there was no damage. Over the past week, at least 5 Russian fuel facilities close to Ukraine's borders and in Crimea have suffered similar attacks, and 2 more drones crashed on the Kremlin roof. Meanwhile, Russia has also launched widespread drone strikes in Ukraine, including on the capital, Kiev. Ukrainian officials say 2/3 of the country were targeted. No casualties have been reported yet. A correspondent in Moscow, Johnny Miller, tells us about the latest developments in the war in Ukraine.
Russia continuing to strike Ukraine. Also, a worrying story of Russia announcing evacuations of civilians in the Zaporozhye region. Now, it's not clear whether this is due to concerns over the nuclear power plant there, or due to concerns of shelling, or due to concerns that Ukraine may have some success in the counteroffensive. So that's an important developing story, and that's the kind of the shadow that's overhanging this war at the moment of this Ukrainian counteroffensive. It's been expected for months, increasing signs that it may well start, but also comments on both sides. One comment from a Ukrainian general recently trying to downplay the West's hope of huge success in this counteroffensive. So very much both sides at the moment, I think, apprehensive about this counteroffensive starting. And I think many of the strikes that we're seeing from both sides are in relation to preparing or trying to counter this counteroffensive.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. The UK police have drawn condemnations for the arrests of dozens of people on the day of coronation of King Charles. Several British lawmakers and human rights groups have criticized the police approach. Came after police forces detained more than 50 people, including leading members of the anti-monarchy group Republic in London. Rights groups have labeled the arrest incredibly alarming and a dangerous precedent. According to the police, the people were held for alleged affray, public order offences, and breach of peace. The arrest came days after the government granted new anti-protest powers to the police forces.
Britain now has a new king. At the first coronation the world has seen in 70 years, the Archbishop of Canterbury crowned British royals Charles and Camilla at Westminster Abbey on Saturday, ushering in the reign of King Charles III. The main focus of British state media was the splendour and grandeur of the spectacle. However, controversy still surrounded the day. Anti-monarchy activists belonging to the peaceful Not My King protest movement were rounded up and arrested ahead of the coronation. The arrests included group leaders.
It's a completely peaceful demonstration. The police, without telling us why, without telling us where they're taking them, have arrested all the rallying organisers. They've seized all our placards. It feels like something out of a police state because we still don't know why anyone's been arrested and we still don't know where they're taking our people. You know? Britain's meant to be a democracy, but Charles isn't treating it like one.
Even before the event took place, criticism of the royal family remained relatively widespread. A survey by the National Centre for Social Research showed public support for the monarchy has fallen to a historic low. A total of 45% of respondents said either it should be abolished, was not at all important, or not very important. Young people particularly expressed embarrassment over the institution's continued existence. Elsewhere, similar polling revealed that many of the King's subjects across the Commonwealth would vote to remove the UK monarch as their head of state, raising speculation that more nations will ditch the Commonwealth in the near future. The ongoing cost of living crisis, undemocratic power, and seemingly endless scandals are among the many reasons experts believe the UK royals' popularity has plummeted.
I don't think anyone can be happy, especially looking at the economic state right now. Well, you only have to go out in the streets and some of the famous streets in London and look how many people are suffering and sleeping on the streets. And that is quite embarrassing and appalling for any sort of government, let alone a monarchy, to be proud to celebrate and spend that amount of money when people are suffering.
Why were many mainstream platforms? So what the royal family stand for today might be different, but it's very, very difficult to erase history. And they have to respect that a large portion of the public still connect them to, let's say, some incredibly sad, vicious and violent times.
The new monarch now faces many challenges, and they're not just including the social, economic and political crises which plague the nation, but also the deep divisions within his own family as well. Depending on how the king handles these many crises could heavily impact the fight for survival that the royal institution now finds itself in. Robert Carter, Windsor.
Let's bring in Rodney Shakespeare, Professor of Economics, who joins us from London. We also have David Miller, academic, broadcaster, and investigative researcher, who joins us from Bristol. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Rodney Shakespeare, I'll first start with you. Taking a look at the economics of this in terms of the finances, I should say, I'd like to get your idea on this, which is said to be roughly about £150 million that was spent on this. The timing, of course, couldn't be any worse based on the cost of living crisis that many Brits are experiencing. Doesn't this play a factor in the psyche of Brits when they take a look at this whole show that was put on?
Yes, of course. There's the economics and there's the show. But we're actually talking about the demonstrations of people being arrested. And the issue here is not about whether you support the monarchy. Many people do. It's not about whether there was any disturbance which might panic the horses, which could be very dangerous. It's about the fact that people were arrested for demonstrations which had been agreed with the police long beforehand. And if I may say so, it's not even about the arrests at those demonstrations. You see, there's been a new law passed, the Public Order Act, and it is being used against not only people protesting lawfully against the coronation. It is being used against those protesting about the environment, about poverty. And it's being done in circumstances where there is protest going right the way across Europe and the censorship coming from the mainstream journalistic organizations and the social conversation organizations is absolutely incredible. The biggest issue of all is they're not discussing the basis of the inflation, which is the eastward march of NATO. So behind this, you're on these demonstrations, which were lawful and agreed with the police, you've got this harder line, this more violent line, and that is a reflection of the increased censorship at a time where the issues are getting more sensitive and there's more distress, and as you are indicating, people financially are coming under pressure.
All right, let's talk about this a little bit further with you, David Miller, the Public Order Act, of how that, in a sense, it does suppress opposition in terms of protest. I guess that's what they're trying to do. Tell us what you think this does, and of course, at the same time, how the UK has been very critical of other countries, and in particular, the Islamic Republic, when it had its riots on the streets, and how it condemned the way that the authorities here, especially the security apparatus, dealt with it. But in particular, how that pans out in the UK.
So, I mean, I think the widening of the lens on this is appropriate, because this is about a collapse of the last vestiges of democracy. And democracy was never really a very strong species in the UK, but this is about the collapse of those last vestiges, so that we can have banners removed by large phalanxes of police officers simply for being displayed on a public occasion. In the context where, of course, we have journalists, in particular Julian Assange, locked up for nothing for 4 years now. I mean, this is, as we've just been seeing, a Europe-wide problem, which is to do with the US and to do with the war in Ukraine, where democracy, the last shreds of democracy are collapsing everywhere. So you can be arrested now in many European countries for having a vague view that that Russia is not the baddie in the Ukraine conflict. Now, of course, this contrasts, as you say, with the treatment of the British government of the Islamic Republic of Iran, where, of course, there were riots, etc., last year, much of which was created and prompted by the US, by the CIA, and with some support from the Zionist entity of Israel. So, I mean, this is obviously a matter of hypocrisy, but all through the country, in the UK, we've seen various ways in which protest has broken out. Yes, of course, there have been the protesters on the day who have been arrested, but we've seen at football matches in Glasgow, in Liverpool, the fans chanting against the coronation, and indeed urging country to feed the poor. There have been political demonstrations in Scotland yesterday where Not My King was the chant, which was to the forefront of the march. So this is a widespread phenomenon of disdain for the monarchy, and it's dangerous for them. But it's in a historical period where the power of the West is declining, and where we will probably see members of the Commonwealth removing the king as the head of state, as the power of the UK as a kind of loyal ally and asset of the US is on the wane. So this is a very dangerous time for the ruling elite, and of course they will use that to lash out against the public should they not toe the line.
Thank you very much for that, David Miller, academic broadcaster and investigative researcher. Rodney Shakespeare, thank you, Professor of Economics from London. With that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in. There's been another mass shooting in the United States. At least 9 people have been killed and 7 others injured by a gunman at a busy mall in Dallas, Texas. The gunman, whom authorities said they believe acted alone, was also killed by the police. To get more details on how the shooting played out, we were earlier joined by our Washington correspondent, Colin Campbell.
Police arrived on the scene at about 6:15 local time because they were answering another call. When they heard the shots ring out, they responded with gunfire, killing the gunman after shots had already been fired. They responded fairly quickly. I heard several people who were killed. And this happened in Allen, Texas, about 50 kilometers from Dallas. It's about 50 kilometers north of Dallas. And, of course, this is not the first time we've seen gun violence happen in Texas. With a very relaxed carrying policy, there were a lot of predictions that we would see gun violence in Texas, and this just happens to be one of the latest incidents. As the U.S. climbs towards 200 in the number of mass shootings since the beginning of the year. Highest incidences of mass shootings since the beginning of the year in the past several years. And we've seen a different number of gun policies change where they've become more relaxed, not just states like Texas, but also in Florida and other states where they have open carry laws or permitless carry laws. And this means that people have easier access to guns. They can carry their guns in the open. They don't have to apply for a permit necessarily. And of course, this just makes the situation where people resort to using a gun for a means of conflict resolution or any type of dispute resolution, it's a lot easier to access that gun because the laws are a lot easier on gun owners and their access to them.
Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi says the U.S. has suffered a humiliating defeat in its maximum pressure campaign against Iran. Raisi made the comment in an address to the 5th Export Potential Exhibition of Iran. The president said that the country has achieved progress despite sanctions and threats. Raisi said Iranian scientists and industrialists have achieved anything that was banned under the sanctions. He added that economic operators have also circumvented and offset the sanctions regime. The president also talked about the negotiations on the removal of anti-Iran sanctions imposed following the U.S. withdrawal of the 2015 nuclear deal. He said that Tehran has never abandoned the talks, but is not tying the national economy and growth to the political process. The Israeli military's blockade of the occupied West Bank city of Ariha is now in its third week. Local media say military checkpoints have been set up by the Israeli army at all the main entrances to the ancient city, also known as Jericho. Israeli forces inspect any vehicle traffic, search Palestinian passengers, and perform identity checks. The city and the adjacent Aqaba Jabba refugee camp have also seen deadly Israeli raids in recent weeks. Since the beginning of this year, at least 9 Palestinians have been killed and scores of others injured and arrested by Israeli forces in the city. The Israeli regime continues with its atrocities against Palestinians. An Israeli settler has shot dead a Palestinian teenager near the city of Afula. 19-year-old Diyar Amari succumbed to his wounds shortly after he was shot. No additional details are available about the incident. Earlier on Saturday, a funeral procession was held for 2 young Palestinians killed by Israeli forces during a raid on a refugee camp near the city of Tulkarm in the occupied West Bank. The 2 Palestinians were in their 20s. The latest Israeli violence brings the total number of Palestinians killed by the regime in the West Bank area this year to 111. Around 20 of the victims are under 18 years old. Saturday's killings come amid rising tensions in the occupied territories, where Israel has stepped up its crackdown against Palestinians. Our correspondent Mona Kandil joined us earlier from Ramallah with more details on the reaction of resistance groups after the killing of the Palestinian teenager by an Israeli settler.
Palestinian resistance groups issued numerous statements vowing to avenge the killing of the young Palestinians and said that Palestinians have the right to resist the Israeli forces and that they will not remain silent. Anti-Israeli operations will continue. Palestinians have the right to defend themselves. Recently, we have been witnessing the formation of newly armed resistance groups. First, there was the Lion's Den and Jenin's brigades, and now there's also Tulkarm brigades who had been adopting a number of anti-Israeli operations and shooting at Israeli military checkpoints and at the illegal settlements near Tulkarm.
Fighting shows no signs of letting up in the Sudanese capital Khartoum as warring parties are in Saudi Arabia for talks to bring an end to the 3-week-old conflict. The U.S.-Saudi initiative is an attempt to end violence between the army and paramilitary forces. The fighting has derailed an internationally backed plan to usher in civilian rule following years of unrest and uprisings. Battles since mid-April have killed hundreds of people and have wounded thousands of others. The conflict has also disrupted aid supplies and sent around 100,000 refugees fleeing abroad. While mediators are seeking a path to peace, both sides have made it clear that they would only discuss a humanitarian truce, not negotiate an end to the war. With that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
aperture.
Welcome back. We met Javad Qarai, an enthusiastic young nature explorer, and followed him as he discovered some of Iran's most unspoiled natural attractions in the southern province of Sistan and Balochistan. We visited the exotic Martian mountains with their peculiar shapes and ventured deep into the intertwining and spiral cave of the region. And finally, we joined Javad as he gazed into the mesmerizing waters of the Sea of Oman above the rocky cliffs. Stay with us as we further explore the wonders of the region and meet the kind-hearted locals.
The area is so beautiful and unspoiled. It is home to large flocks of birds, such as the cormorant sitting on the sandy beaches offering a scenic spectacle. It is the perfect place for bird watchers to come and feast their eyes on these exotic animals. Bird watching is a branch of tourism, or to be exact, ecotourism. Bird watchers are steadily growing in number. Cormorants are aquatic birds. They are medium to large in size, with a body weight in the range of 0.35 to 5 kilograms and a wingspan of 45 to 100 centimeters. The majority of the species have dark feathers. They are excellent divers, and underwater, they propel themselves with their feet with help from their wings. Some cormorant species have been found to dive as deep as 45 meters. Cormorants nest in colonies around the shore, on trees, islets, or cliffs. They are coastal rather than oceanic birds, and some have colonized inland waters. Indeed, the original ancestor of cormorants seems to have been a freshwater bird. In my previous trips here, I saw large flocks of these beautiful birds here in this season. But this time, there aren't so many of them. One of the reasons behind the decline in their populations is because some of the locals hunt and eat them. Although cormorants are not supposed to be eaten because they are carnivorous. According to some religious scholars, flesh-eating birds are not to be eaten. The flesh of carnivorous birds may contain many diseases that can be passed on to humans if eaten. But the locals are not aware of that. Those who hunt the cormorants do not do so because there is nothing else to eat, so they have no reason to kill and consume so many of these poor birds and do irreparable damage to the wildlife and environment in the region. The environment and wildlife are manifestations of God's beauty. How can humans, who consider themselves the greatest of creations, allow themselves to harm the manifestations of God's beauty? Human survival on the planet Earth inevitably depends on the environment and on the wildlife. Therefore, our country's officials should educate the local populations and make sure that the environment in each and every part of the country is well taken care of. This has been a very beautiful day for me. Berries is one of the most beautiful places I have visited, and I have visited many over the years. A day later, I'm on my way to a beautiful village in the heart of nature, accompanied by my good friend, Shir Muhammad Rahul. To get to Sham-e-Kohne, that's the name of the village, we have to walk a relatively long way surrounded by beautiful natural beauties. Near the village, we run into a shepherd named Shir Muhammad, sitting under an old leafless tree by a pond. His is the simplest of lifestyles. The Baluch mainly speak the Baluchi language, a branch of northwestern Iranian languages. Experts say the Baluch language is very similar to that of the Medes, a people of Indo-Iranian origin, who inhabited the western and northwestern portion of present-day Iran, and that is a testimony to the deep roots of the Baluch tribe in Iran. Today, the Baluch people live in the southwest of Iran, the south of Pakistan, Afghanistan, Oman, India, the UAE, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Zanzibar. Borders between countries haven't been able to separate members of this ancient Iranian tribe. Although they live in different countries, the Baluch have preserved their traditions. They pay each other visits, and intertribal marriages are common. The Shahnameh and several other old books have placed the dwelling place of the Baluch people at around the north of modern-day Khorasan province. For various reasons, this peace-loving, serene tribe have had to move here, the southeast of Iran, and lived in peace since. Shir Muhammad Baluch is one of the original members of the old Sham village. But today, the village is nothing more than a collection of abandoned buildings where he can rest during sizzling hot days. This is amazing. They place one lantern and both families lived under the light of that one lantern. There isn't much left of the old Sham village, but even the ruins of it speak of the very rich culture of the kind, hospitable Baluch people. One of the structures that has stood the test of time is the beautiful mosque of Old Sham, built by the very hands of those who inhabited the village many years ago. It's gotten unbearably hot by now. I am kilometers away from the coast of the Sea of Oman in Baluchistan. But that distance is not going to keep me from a much-needed dive on the golden sand beach. The difference between the temperatures in Iran's climate zones is incredible, and to many, unbelievable. I'm in the southeasternmost part of Iran, swimming in the Sea of Oman in the middle of winter. On this same day, some of my mountaineer friends climbing up Mount Damavand tell me the temperature where they are is around minus 30 degrees. That's a difference of 60 degrees between two areas of Iran. I've done my swimming, and now I've decided to travel to the southeastern end of Iranian territory. That's the Gwadar Bay, located in the Gulf of Oman on the maritime border of Iran and Pakistan. A lot of fish is caught and brought to shore here. Many large trawler launches unload their catches on smaller boats on the shore. Before they arrive in Iranian territory, the fish coming from those launches are purchased by middlemen and transported to big cities around the country. The main purpose of my trip to Guadar Bay is to see the beautiful Hara mangrove forest in this border area. Hara is a species of the Lantana genus. The seeds from the tree fall into the water, where wave action takes them to more stationary parts of the sea. The Hara seeds become fixed in the soil layers of the sea and grow. Hara trees are saltwater plants that are often submerged at high tide. They are salt-tolerant trees and are adapted to life in harsh coastal conditions. They contain a complex salt filtration system and a complex root system to cope with saltwater immersion and wave action. They are adapted to the low oxygen conditions of waterlogged mud. We are now exactly at the mouth of Khure Bahu. This is the zero point that separates Iran from Pakistan. We are about to enter a very beautiful river. As a matter of fact, it's a khur or firth, it's not a river. And it continues a long way in that direction. Khure Bahu is in fact a bay area created by water from the Sea of Oman. This is the last spot before you actually arrive in the sea itself. Before the firth, there is the Bahu Kalat River that flows from Sarbaz Mountains to the Gulf of Oman. This is it. I can see the mountains of Pakistan vividly from here. Pakistan is located right on the other side of the Hara Forest. A lot of birds and fish live here in this firth, which, as I said, was created by salty waters from the Sea of Oman. It's a very beautiful area. The Hara forests spanning this area are indeed unique. The Hara tree grows to heights of 6 meters and has bright green leaves and twigs. It is a species of the mangrove tree that can grow in coastal saline or brackish water. They have a complex salt filtration system and complex root system to cope with saltwater immersion and wave action. The Hara excludes salt by having significantly impermeable roots, which are highly impregnated with suberin, acting as an ultrafiltration mechanism to exclude sodium salts from the rest of the plant. Hara trees grow in 8 protected areas in Iran and are fortunately looked after by both the authorities and people. The Hara forests in the south of Iran are a major habitat for migratory birds in the cold season and for reptiles, fish, and varieties of bivalves. Green or hooked turtles and venomous aquatic snakes are also indigenous to the forests. Bird life includes herons, flamingos, pelicans, and angler eagles. Another important feature of these forests is the appropriate and suitable seabed conditions for the ovulation of fish in the Persian Gulf. The locals say you are very likely to run into a school of dolphins passing Guadar Bay on your way to see the Hara forests. But looks like I'm down on my luck today. There are still many villages in Baluchistan that have weathered the storm of time and preserved their traditional look. But the way to visit one of them is to seek guidance from a local guide. And that person is none other than my very own friend, Shir Muhammad. We have a long way ahead of us to the village we have decided to visit. To get there, we have to drive on a vast plain. There are no paved roads, not so much as a dirt track. The name of the village is Nilag. Baluchistan is a very dry province. It rains very little here. As a result, not very long ago, the people of Baluchistan would dig a catchment to accumulate what little rainwater that fell from the sky. Those catchments acted as their only water reservoirs. They called them hotags. The importance of drinking water is not lost on anyone nowadays. Aware of the shortage of this vital liquid, countries around the world have embarked on preserving and conserving drinking water in recent years. The best way to prevent water from going to waste in a country like Iran that's facing a severe water problem is changing the consumption pattern. Put it simply, every human being needs only 10 liters of water to wash their whole body. But most of us keep the water running while having a shower and let something between 100 and 200 liters of precious drinking water go into the septic tank. Nowadays, most of us think that to keep our yards clean, we have to wash them with tap water every week. While in the past, although the problem of water was not as serious in Iran as it is now, and the population was not as big, people would clean their yards with sprinkles of water and a broom. And the purpose was to prevent dust from rising when sweeping. In the past, there weren't as many cars that needed to be washed with drinking water every few days. But today, millions of liters of water is consumed every year to wash the millions of vehicles across the country. I came to realize the importance of drinking water in recent years. On one of my trips to this same Baluchistan region, I ended up bathing with only 3 liters of water after going without a wash for a whole week. It was a time when the people here were grappling with a drought. That incident led me to understand the importance of drinking water in Iran. I now understand why we shouldn't let even a single drop of it go to waste. This is one of the oldest houses in this whole area. In this whole village. And Haji Khodabakhsh was in fact born in this same house. He's giving me a tour of the interior. The houses in the village of Nilag are beautiful and traditional. But there is one house in this village that is very old, very beautiful, and unique. In Baluchi language, this house is called a kud. It is dark in the house. There is no electricity, no running water, and not even a room. This is all there is to it. The owner says that all the members of the family, and there were 9 of them, used to live together in this house that is no more than one big lounge. But despite all the deprivations, the members of the family are as close as ever. The Baluch are a very kind, family-loving people. I feel an eerie feeling of calm among these pure souls. Baluch hospitality makes any stranger visiting these parts feel at home in their houses. You feel like you were born and raised in one of these houses and lived a good, simple life growing up with these genial and warm people. Most of the Baluch people who don't go fishing at sea are herders, and in this area, camels are the best livestock to keep. Camels have adapted very well to the environment and climate of Baluchistan. My journey is coming to an end. Shir Muhammad tells me about one of his friends. Mr. Shah Bakhsh is one of the main camel herders in the region. The old camel rider tells me about Baluch kindness towards all of the world's creatures. Kindness embedded in the culture of this people. The Baluch are a very kind and passionate people, traits that are evident in the words of Mr. Shah Bakhsh. When I ask him if he's ever tried camel meat, he says the Baluch normally do not eat camel. That's because camels are loved by these people, and so they don't have the heart to slaughter them, much less eat their meat. I have arrived at the end of my trip, a trip that taught me many valuable lessons about the Baluch people and Baluchistan. This is a province with a beautiful, unspoiled environment. A place where the sea meets the mountains and plains. The Baluch people, with their rich ancient culture, are a source of great pride for Iran. I too am proud of these honest, kind people. Proud of having such generous fellow countrymen and women. The Sea of Oman looks like a drop of water against the unfathomable hearts of these people. All I want for the people here is proper, stable jobs compatible with their culture and environment, created by competent and caring government officials. I hope for facilities and development to come to this part of my country without doing any damage to its ancient culture and pristine environment.
Well, perhaps Iran's internationally renowned mosques and ancient remnants of Isfahan and Shiraz are what attracts most visitors from far and wide, but I'm sure many nature-loving individuals have become interested in visiting Iran's southernmost region and the pristine natural wonders of Sistan and Baluchistan. And that's it for this week, everyone. Thank you. Do join me again next time here on Aperture for another documentary. Goodbye for now.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intel Sat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is for a better life.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. This is For a Better Life from IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkal, and today I want to talk about another strategy to be taken which is related to Islamic lifestyle. My words are taken from Quranic verses and Islamic narrations.
The subject of today's discussion is to take advantage of opportunities. The most important thing in people's life is the life itself, because life is nothing but a time that is given to people to do something. And only a dead person, I mean someone who has died, has no time at all. So life is equal to time, a time that is given to someone who is alive, that starts from when he is born and ends when he dies. Everything that man can do, like learning something, doing good work, helping others, worshipping Allah, getting higher education rank and whatnot, these are the good items and also the bad items. All of them depends a lot on how much we use this time. This is a fact. Another fact is that this time is quickly passing, quickly running out. Time is passing in such a way that if a person is not clever and does not take advantage of situations, he will realize soon and in the blink of an eye that he has lost many valuable times and many suitable opportunities. The importance of time as the basis of human life is to the extent that God has sworn to it in the Quran and says, "Wal-asr," I swear to the age, or I swear to the time. And then Allah continues, "Inna al-insana lafi khusr," that man is in a great loss. The word loss here means that man's capital of life, which is time, is going to be spent gradually and is going to come to an end. The time is so precious that any type of evolution and excellence is possible during the lifetime that is available to each person. And with the passage of time, this human capital is diminishing and decreasing until it ends completely. Some commentators of the Quran have likened the meaning of the verse to an ice cellar. When Allah says people are in loss, they likened it to the cellar of the ice, who says to people, "Have mercy on the one whose capital is melting." Life is like ice that melts moment by moment. If the ice cellar doesn't sell it to anyone and doesn't get money in return, all his capital will melt and will run out. Life consists of seconds, minutes, days, months, and years, and it is constantly passing. There is a famous Persian poet who says, "Har dam az omr mi ravad nafasi, chon negah mi konam namonde basi." Every breath of life goes away, and when I look, there is not enough left. Another important point here is that no human being is born to ice, so as to test the affairs of the world, and one time that he is born and then dies, and to apply his experience at another fortune that he is born again. No, it is impossible. A person's life is an opportunity that is given to him only once, and of course his time is limited. Therefore, according to the limited moments of life that pass one after other and quickly, one should take advantage of them and use each and every moment and opportunities he has in the best way. The greatest art of life is to use these unique opportunities that are given to us. We have in our life, and that we should not neglect them and let them pass without using them and without taking advantage from them. Imam Ali, in one of his noble sayings in Nahj al-Balagha, says, "Al-fursatu tamurru marra as-sahab, fantahizu furas al-khayr." opportunities pass like clothes. So appreciate good opportunities and use them before they are lost. The Arabic word al-fursa, which means opportunity, is a complete preparation of good means, good tools and facilities, like the preparation of all the necessary items for someone to study science. All of these opportunities and items are related to many factors. These factors may disappear due to various changes in life, the changes that take places in the world. So these opportunities that are linked to those factors would be lost. For this reason, as long as there is an opportunity, one should appreciate it and make the most of it. Because in no time, one would see that the opportunity is no longer there and the chance for him is not available. Everything that happens in life, that we call it chance, luck, opportunities, and the like, is precisely planned by Allah. These opportunities are actually God's blessing that are presented in a special way in our life. Let's go for a short break and I will be back.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
I was talking about the importance of opportunities. If an opportunity, that is a combination of a number of good factors, appears in our life, it means that God has allowed us to use one of His blessings to reach higher levels. Another fact here is that time is irreversible. When a fraction of time passes, it will never come back at all. When it passes, it is lost forever. For example, if we have an hour to study, when this hour passes, it will not return. The only thing we can do is to use another hour that we have in the future. Not paying attention to these precious times in our life may bring about a deep sorrow, because sometimes missing an opportunity causes a lot of damage that cannot be easily compensated. For this reason, Imam Ali says to his son Imam Hassan, "Badil al-fursa قبل أن تكون غصة." Go for opportunities and use them before they are lost and before they become a cause of sadness for you. When time is irretrievable, a wakeful man is cautious about it. Youth, health, security, readiness of spirit and mind, and in general, life, which is a time given to us, is a set of these fleeting opportunities that if we do not treasure them, if we do not appreciate them, and don't take advantage of them, it will have a sad result. Every moment of these opportunities, I mean youth, health, and whatever of other items, every of them that passes, we cannot regain them again. We must also pay attention that the good opportunities we have in our life are gained with difficulty but are lost quickly. So, a wise person should be on the lookout to catch these opportunities and not let them be wasted. Taking advantage of opportunities and use them in the way that pleases God is a form of gratitude to Allah, because these opportunities are actually God's blessing. And we know that it is obligatory to be thankful for these God-given blessings. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash. Every word I share, He knows.
voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.